Ahoy there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with frequent flyers and close with sequin liners. I'm Adrian, as always, here with Paul. Let's get big factin'. Let's get no capping. I am your captain.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap. Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
So what's up, Paul?
Not much. How's your day been?
Yeah, my day is going well. Went to the gym, did some grocery shopping. And pro tip for any of the listeners out there, if you really like the Snickers ice cream bar, but you're looking for a more adult version that you can fit into your lifestyle, Kind now makes ice cream bars that are like actually pretty macro friendly and really fucking good. Definitely scratch that itch. But yeah, what about you? What have you been up to?
I don't know. I don't have any grocery store tips for people.
Nothing? Didn't you just go yesterday?
Watermelon season's been in, and I've been enjoying it, folks. Get yourself a watermelon.
I've never bought a watermelon.
You've never? That can't be true.
It's not one of my favorite fruits.
What?
Yeah.
First off, just price to deliciousness ratio and amount of food you get out of control. One watermelon will feed you for so long. Mm-hmm. If anything gets too much food, you're like, how am I going to possibly finish a watermelon this week?
Mm-hmm. It's a week-long project for you to finish a watermelon?
$7. Yeah. What, you think I'm finishing it in one sitting? What are you calling me?
A watermelon is $7? That's crazy. That seems like an expensive thing of fruit.
Well, you can't compare it to a single apple.
All right. What do you look for? You look for a field spot? You look for sounds more hollow than it looks like based on its density or whatever?
I try not to overthink it. I just put my palm on it and I try to like envision the memory of the watermelon's life and have a flashback. And if I see it was cared for and loved for, pick it up.
Okay. One of those free range watermelons.
Mm-hmm.
To hang out in the grass.
I just try to mind meld with it like I'm an avatar. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, you've never seen those movies, have you?
I saw it in theaters. And what's interesting is I left the theater and I said, I don't think that's going to have the cultural impact that it should have based on how big it was.
Adrian, you were a prescient child, because let me tell you what the dominant narrative about those movies is.
Huh?
I wonder if in retrospect, people are eventually going to say that about superhero movies. I don't, like, is it going to be like Star Wars where kids love Iron Man in 20 years, or is it going to slowly die with the adults who liked it when it was big?
I have no idea. No predictions from me. I don't know. I don't know how I would quantify that in my daily life.
Harry Potter's definitely stood the test of time, irrespective of what we think about that turf shit. It's definitely like held a grasp over our culture for a really long time.
Yeah, people still ask you questions about what house you're in.
Yeah. Did you ever hate the fake humility of people who say that they're Hufflepuffs? Pisses me off. Just say you're a Gryffindor. You clearly think you'd be a Gryffindor.
I think we've talked about this before, on pod before. Because your bit is you always go captain of the Quidditch team. I would have been a Gryffindor.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Probably Harry's best
friend.
My bit
is always I would be a person in the real world who doesn't know that magic exists and is just like a mailman or something.
Harry's real problem with our friendship would be that he'd be jealous of how good I am at Quidditch, and I would have to help him get better.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. That would be you. Biggest jock.
Yeah, youngest captain on the Quidditch team, prefect, all that.
What I was going to say was, apparently, Phil figured out this hack where you can watch the battles that are on the exclusive URL app as long as you do audio only. You can not have a subscription and listen to them. So he's been telling me about the battles that happened at the latest big event, and he was saying everyone has a sinner's bar. So apparently that's the real cultural impact right now in battle rap. I remember like 3 years ago when we were watching an event and we like very clearly clocked that everyone had a Squid Game bar. But for this one, everyone had a sinner's bar. So apparently that's the big cultural force in battle rap right now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I would not have clocked that as a movie that enough people have seen that you can just like reference it randomly and people would know. But I guess your point about battle rap is that it doesn't matter if people have or don't know about something. You could just reference it anyway.
As long as enough people in the room collectively understand what you're supposed to be or what you're trying to say.
Yeah. What's your most niche battle rap bar that you imagine an entire crowd of people wouldn't get, but if they did, it would be hard?
You're asking me to say my most niche bar that I haven't made yet? Or do you think that I have like a bunch of rhymes in a notebook like I'm an old school 90s rapper?
I thought you had a little notebook.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got bars. Hold on. Let me open this up real quick. Let's see. Got that fish hopping out the water like Ponyo. Is that a thing? Is that something?
No, because it feels like it's supposed to be a double entendre, but I don't think it has a second meaning.
What do you mean? There's like four meanings in that. You don't get it.
I got that head. Fish hopping out that water. Oh, yeah, because it's like when you're at that club and the fish hopping. I got you.
When you're cooking cocaine and you make the fish hop out of the water.
The fish hop the water. Mm-hmm.
And I'd be saying it against a guy who's a Grape Street Crip. So, like, you know, there are fishes, you know, so out of the water. Out of
water. And
so, yeah, yeah. It's pretty layered.
Got all that right there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's see. Hold on. What else do I have in here? Leave you with a crooked fade like Fleabag sister. Is that a thing? What was her name?
I do not remember that show like that.
That's niche.
That really affected a lot of people emotionally that I was like, yeah, it's pretty good.
The people who liked it loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. I really have no criticisms of it as a show. It just really hit some people way harder than it hit me.
Which is interesting, because based on the way the people were talking about it, I was expecting something really momentous. And then you watch that first scene, it's about anal. And you're like, what? This is just a Rory Scovel bit?
It kind of, yeah.
It just starts off being like, anal, anal. No, it's a good show. No complaints for me, yeah.
No complaints.
What's your favorite quote from that show? Is it when she says that if she had bigger tits, she wouldn't be a feminist?
Now that's funny.
And that's funny. Come on now. Or is it when she says, chocolate, ack?
Yeah, no, my favorite quote is when she says, Jack Donaghy, you'll never run this channel.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When she says something about, or when Jack Donaghy says something about her having tricks up her sleeves, and then she shows that she has cereal in her sleeves. That's a good show. Oh, did you have any media roundup for this week? Anything you watched?
No, not really.
No grocery stories, no media roundup, damn. All right. I just had... Oh, I watched Mike Birbiglia's special. I don't know if it's his last one, but maybe the one before that, The Old Man in the Pool.
Did he mix, like, kind of deeper stories in with, like, little comedic bits? And overall, there was, like, an overarching message?
I've got some good news for you.
Ed?
That's exactly what he did. That was actually basically going to be what I was going to talk about, was, like, I listened to his podcast where he works out the bits, so maybe it's because I kind of felt like I'd heard some of the jokes before. But it did really just feel so Mike Birbiglia that, like, at certain points I wasn't even laughing. I was just kind of appreciating, like, oh, yeah, he's pretty good at doing this. I'm not really laughing, but, like, you know, he's pretty good at putting this together.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like when
he's really good at telling a story within a story, and then, like, the side story or the sub story takes so long that when he says, so anyways, then I talked to my doctor, everyone's like, he was off subject for, like, 5 minutes.
It's like watching a documentary about a sushi master. You don't get to taste and appreciate the sushi, but you appreciate the craftsmanship.
That's kind of what it was. I'm not going to lie. But, it was good. I liked his pants. He was wearing good pants during that special. Cool. Well, do you want to get into the theme? Or?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Business or pleasure?
Is that our theme?
Oh, I was just asking as a way to get to the theme, but our theme is aviation.
Is it aviation, like, we're concerned with the industry? I think it's, like, air travel as a consumer.
I thought we were going to start with, like, what are their names? Luigi? No.
Mangione?
No, the Wright brothers. Oh, North Carolina's own.
We'll go old-timey, and I'll start making, like, sounds, and we'll do, like, an old radio play. A sound of two brothers in a field with a dream in their eye and a skip in their heart. I'm gonna make it Luigi! I'm a fly!
What were their actual names? Wilbur and Orville?
Is that true? That also sounds very silly. That doesn't sound much better than Luigi and Mario.
I heard this recently that, and you feel like sometimes whenever you hear about this and someone's passionate about it, you just kind of assume they're true. That someone told me, they're like, oh, they weren't even the first in flight. It was actually someone in Colorado. And I was like, oh, all right, well, I'm not going to look that up, but I guess that's probably true.
I guess
my heroes are cornballs.
Is that something where it's a gradient of people gliding to flying?
Probably.
Or is it actually just somebody else came up with it first?
Technically, the first person to jump laterally was the first person for air travel, if you really think about it.
Isn't it? It's also like the debate between Ohio and North Carolina, right? Because weren't they from Ohio and that's where their shop was, but they just happened to do the first flight in North Carolina? So like what state is the inventor of flight or whatever?
I didn't know that. There were some Ohio boys. I don't think Ohio gets that. North Carolina gets that. Anyways, so what do you have to say about the state of aviation? What was your first plane ride?
Probably too young to remember.
Oh.
Moving from like Canada to France as a 1-year-old, so I definitely don't.
Mm. You don't remember being a 1-year-old and being like, oh, I'm gonna mess with this person next to me, I'm gonna cry this whole time.
I was like, I'm not even feeling bad right now. It's actually I'm kinda chilling, but
I'm chilling, but I'm gonna cry right now. How funny would that be? Check this out.
Mom, check this out. It's gonna be so cool.
Ma, check this out.
Look, no hands, Ma.
I touched the net. I think mine was maybe 3rd grade when I went to Guatemala.
3rd grade.
I think so. I don't think we took any trips that needed air travel before then.
How do you feel about going to the airport nowadays? Are you, it stresses you out?
It doesn't really stress me out. I'm notoriously a little bit too chill about timing, and it's always worked out for me. I do hate it. That is usually my sentiment if someone asks me about air travel. I feel grateful whenever I can because it is expensive and it's like, oh, cool. I get to go do something presumably fun. That's why I'm flying. I don't fly for a lot of funerals. So in that sense, I kind of like it. I like kind of having a day off where you kind of are just like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to drink a beer in the airport during my layover or whatever. And that's going to be my day.
Oh, yeah. That's what me and you's main disagreements about air travel is I have no interest in drinking because I have a small bladder and I'm not trying to get up 10 times during the flight to go use the bathroom.
I got a big old bladder.
Yeah, you can fit it all in there and still take a nap.
I might wake up a little bit wet, you know, ain't no biggie.
That's more the person sitting next to me's problem than mine.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly go to the airport alone now because I don't really travel with my family
because
like
other
that.
Other people hate you. Oh, yeah, that too.
Or like, yeah, I'm not really doing that with other people a lot. So I very much think of it as like an alone activity, which I don't think is true for everybody. But in that sense, it's always like, yeah, you know. Sometimes my nose gets stuffy on planes, and I really hate that. I hate nighttime flights where I feel like I can't breathe and I can't sleep because I can't sleep in public. But, you know, there are little remedies you can use to get through all that, so it's all whatevs.
I do hate TSA. I am one of those people that it does, like, bother me.
Really?
It bothers me. They have that power over me. I don't like it. Wow. It's annoying.
Yeah. They always do that thing to me where they clearly look into my bag because of the diabetic stuff, and then they pretend it was something else. So they're like, oh, this is a cool sleep mask. Is it like heated or whatever? And it's like, I was like, just you can just say that you're looking through the needles and stuff. I don't care.
It's mostly not heroin. There's only a little bit of heroin.
Only a little bit.
They do the same thing to me because of head shaving gear, straight razors. They always check for the razor. I've stopped. Started leaving it behind, but that is also a little annoying, but I guess it's more convenient than having to get pulled aside.
You come back home with a little peach fuzz?
The other thing about it is, like, I've thought, like, oh, I'll leave the razors behind and just buy razors on the other end, but if they see the razor handle that takes a razor, they know what that looks like, so they still open your bag to check that there's no razor in there. That's not like...
There's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, where there's a razor handle, there could be a razor.
It's true. And I think I've mentioned before on Pod that when I had my Dexcom, you can't go through the traditional security, so you do have to ask because of magnets or whatever. So you do have to ask for a pat-down, and that always feels like the most... it feels like you're confessing to a crime, which is always really annoying.
You're like,
and
hey,
they kind of treat
you
like that, too.
Can you just touch me instead? I hate just walking through a thing. Can you just... can you feel me up, please?
That's what I usually say.
You are bought and owned by the man, Adrian. Stand up for yourself.
Yep. Same thing for With the Omnipod, I can go through security the regular way, but they do always see it. They always ask about it.
Because this is Adrian's special diabetes stuff.
Yeah. But they always rub it down for bomb juice, so no, I always get that treatment too.
I've had that before. I forget why they rubbed my shit down, what they saw in there that they were like, we need to check for bomb juice.
Yeah. That's what they said.
Did you see that person recently who got sent back on, like, they were just on, like, a tourism visa to come visit the U.S. from, I forget what, Norwegian country, somewhere in, like, Northern Europe. And they got sent back because they had a J.D. Vance as, like, the fat lollipop kid meme.
Oh, yeah. What's up with that?
I don't know. It's really fucked up we did that, but it's definitely funnier it happened than it didn't.
Yeah, the rise of fascism.
Isn't that one of the things we'd, like, say about, like, North Korea or China? Would be like, oh, yeah, we have said that about China. We're like, oh, China won't let people do Winnie the Pooh jokes about Xi Jinping. They're so authoritarian. And now we're just like, don't call J.D. Vance a little puffy fat boy.
That's very mean. Middle seat, aisle seat, window seat. You're a little piss boy, right?
So yeah, you got the, I'll take the aisle if, but I'll also take the window seat sometimes if I'm like, I just want to sleep. It is kind of hard to choose months out sometimes, so yeah. I've also been moving to window more often because the aisle seats are getting pretty bad in that, like, I feel like you just get bumped so often by the,
They need to decide if they're going to make the aisles bigger or if they're going to hire women with less fat asses. They need to make a choice because that happens all the goddamn time when you're in an aisle seat.
I've started moving to window because I'm like, at least then I can just push up against the window and there's no chance I'm going to be bumped while I'm sleeping.
Yeah, for me, it's I just don't like bothering people during a flight if I do have to get up. So I kind of like the aisle seat just for that reason. Have you ever flown first class?
No. Have you?
No.
Well, not something we can talk about then, Adrian. Just let everybody know we're broke boys on this podcast.
We are. I always wanted to.
Trying to make this podcast kind of like aspirational vibes for people. Like, I think people are listening because they want to live the type of lifestyle we live.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep making it obvious we're broke boys, it kind of destroys that whole branding we're going for.
We're in first class up in the sky.
We're trying to be like a future music video, Adrian.
You mean like one that's going to happen later, or do you mean like one from the rapper?
From the rapper.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying. Have I ever told you when I was like, the idea of first class just kind of broke my brain, where I was like, how are you allowed to make a vehicle and then just have a part of it where you're like, this part's nicer, pay more? Like, how is it? I don't understand. Why are you allowed to do
Wait,
that?
Wait, what age? I don't get what about that confused you.
I was just like, at what point do you stop? At what point do you not just have, like, a super premium section? Or, like, I don't know, like, what's...
They do, on some really nice planes. That was kind of one of the first ideas for the third segment I had, is...
Yeah.
Do you ever hear about those really, like... I don't know how many flights actually service them, but it'll always be, like, Singapore Airlines or Qatar Airways. Yeah. And it'll be like, oh, like, you can order a shower on this flight if you're in their first class. Or you get, like, your own fully reclining bed in this airline.
You get your own apartment.
Class. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting all the, like, different... Because I think, obviously, it's all, like, gimmicks, and they probably don't actually service that many flights with these, like, things, but... Since they are gimmicks and for marketing about how luxurious the airline is, I think they all try to do like different viral one-upsmanship.
Get a massage on the plane.
Yeah, I bet you one has done a massage on it. That has to be one. But yeah, overall for me, I think flying is mostly a negative experience. Most of the time nowadays.
Paul, you said you've never been on a private jet before. But your name is in the Epstein logs?
No, you see, it's neither of those is true.
Oh, okay.
Also, if I was on the Epstein logs the years he was active, I would have been a victim. Okay, Adrian, not a not a perpetrator.
No, you're the only one who is still a perpetrator.
Okay, so let's make that clear.
You're giving Stephen Hawking foot rubs. I can't even feel him.
Should that have been our third segment, is going through the Epstein logs and be like, wow, that guy?
That guy? Look up his interview where he's just like, you know, I didn't stay for the after party. I don't really know what happened there. I was just there for a regular time.
I didn't stay for the after party.
Roll up on you and let the machine talk, Stephen Hawking. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wait, what I was going to say in my summary of air travel. Let's see. Any notable stories about people being annoying on planes? I specifically tried not to pick an etiquette question because that's what 90% of them were, but we were very right that this is a very common advice column type question. So,
yeah.
Stinky food, guy who's too big for his seat or whatever. What else is the
thing? I didn't pick this one, but I saw somebody. This was a really odd one to me. It seemed obviously not impolite.
Reclines their chair?
No, it was a person who was like, me and my wife ordered champagne, and then somebody else ordered it after us, and they told them they were out of champagne. Now I feel rude. And I was like, why? What?
What?
What's going on there?
Seems should like give them your champagne.
A little odd. Yeah, yeah. Share your champagne.
Yeah.
You're right. The reclining chair one is odd to me. I actually saw, I read the answer to one of those, and the answer was the advice columnist saying, yeah, you should look back and ask, is it okay if I recline? And I'm like, I don't know if maybe I'm being rude. I would never look back and ask somebody if I could recline.
I never recline. I don't need the space.
I'm much taller than you. I do need the space.
Okay, we'll put that on the record, officer. My principle on it, it does seem a little bit weird to me that people are angry about it. Like, the chairs recline. That's part of what they were made to do. Like, you're allowed to do that. I don't know why people police each other on being able to.
If somebody looked back at me and asked, can I recline, I'd be like, this person's never flown before. Like, I wouldn't think it was that weird, but I'd be like, this person's, it's a little odd they asked. I'd be like, yeah, sure, of course. That's the chairs do it. Everybody does it.
And then you're just going to be there with your little tray up to your chest, not being able to get on your laptop or whatever.
Recline that far. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're going to have their head's going to be in your lap. You're going to be petting them on the head while they sleep. I think most people don't recline on the flights that I'm on. I don't know.
Really? You're on the...
Yeah, I don't know.
On that red eye, people aren't trying to sleep. You're not getting a little recline in action.
I don't know. I feel like I don't see it that often. But either way, I don't really care about it. I mean, that's what the seat does. You're allowed to do it. That being said, bringing on stinky food. Come on now.
Yeah.
People trying to talk to you. I've actually had some delightful conversations on flights. That's a big can of worms that we didn't talk about at all. There are so many viral videos of people on planes doing crazy shit. And the last one that I saw was like, it was a plane that was delayed for takeoff. And some parents just let the kid pick up the phone that's like the speaker system and just sing for everybody. And so the whole conversation online was like, oh, I think that's cute. And then other people being like, what other parents think that they're the only ones in the world in the plane or whatever? Like, how do they think
so
that that's okay to do?
I'm so much on the second side of that. How would you possibly kid do that? And I'm not like a weird antinatalist person.
Yeah, you're a very big let kids do whatever they want.
Yeah, but I mean, that is like, obviously you let them do what they want.
Beyond the pale.
Yeah, that's beyond the pale.
Interesting.
But then I guess the other side of that coin is the people who do get mad at a crying kid, and it's like, what do you want? Like, kids cry. Leave those parents alone. They can't control that.
Yeah,
it's like we'll never have a reasonable society that can handle these things in any sort of sensible way. It's always going to be weird anti-kid people and weird parents who let their kids do everything.
That's true. Other videos that I've seen on a plane, I don't know. The other ones aren't as fun to talk about. Usually
yeah,
they're more
saw,
like someone kind of going a little
like
batty.
A couple days ago where the woman was grabbing another woman by the hair and trying to...
That's not okay.
Like, attack
her. You can't
her.
Do that.
Yeah.
Have you ever met anybody cool on a plane? Did you ever meet with somebody who you found out is related to your family or something like that?
No,
who knows
I've
your
had
dad?
Fine conversations. I don't always get annoyed when people talk to me, but I definitely never initiate.
Really?
But sometimes when people have talked to me, it's been like, oh, this person's actually pretty nice. It's fine that they talk to me.
Anything else? Any flight hacks that you do?
No, not really.
I think I mentioned not being able to breathe on planes sometimes because it gets really dry. Afrin, I think, is the spray that I use that works really well. For the audience.
Cool. You want to get into columns?
Yeah, sure.
Alrighty. Adrian, I'm bringing in a column we haven't done a lot before, afar.com. It's the unpacked advice column, and it reflects on what happens when travel brings us in close quarters with someone we'd prefer to avoid. The question answerer is Anutaranath. Dear Unpacked, I'd love for you to settle a debate I had with a friend last week. On a recent flight, the woman next to me had, by my count, 8 little bottles of vodka. She then loudly made fun of nearby passengers, pretended to talk on the phone, tried to snuggle with me, and spilled half a bottle of water on my pants. She didn't get belligerent, but it was obviously an unpleasant flight. I was so thankful to have an extra pair of pants in my carry-on, and though the flight attendant seemed to be sympathetic, the flight was completely full, so I couldn't go anywhere. I think the flight attendant should have cut her off after the first signs of her being tipsy. My friends say that I wasn't in harm's way, that drinking on an airplane is one of the few luxuries left in air travel, and that ultimately I have a funny travel story. What do you think?
Man, bring back smoking on airplanes. Bring back our luxuries. That's definitely over-serving, right? Wouldn't that be the attendance issue?
I don't think they served her. I think the implication was she just had the shooters in her pack.
Oh.
But I guess they could have.
Isn't that a rule on most like airplanes, though? You're not allowed to bring your own alcohol into...
Oh. Oh, do they not sell shooters at the airport? I guess...
I think, but you're not allowed to, like, I think most airlines have a rule against that.
But you're right. He did actually use the word, you're right, because now that I think about it, he used the word cut her off, and she could have only cut her off if she was serving her.
And you know, flight attendants, they are kind of like that, though. I remember once asking for, it was like a long trip across the country. I got a thing of alcohol the first time they came with drinks, and then I went back after I missed the second drink run to ask for another thing. And he was like, I'm going to go ahead and give you two. And I was like, all right, sassy, but I'll take it.
Wait, that's happened to me, too. I think, do they train Wait, them really? To say, I'm going to give you two? I've been single charged and given doubles on airplanes multiple times.
I've also gotten a lot of free ones. Yeah, if anything inconvenient happens and I ask for a thing of alcohol, they'll be like, yeah, it's on me.
Like I said, I don't drink that much, so I've definitely never had to be cut off. I've never had them be like, we're going to take your keys, and I'm like, I'm Ubering on the other end.
I didn't, yeah. There was one time where we were coming back out of soccer practice in Chapin or whatever, because that's where the Plex, the indoor facility, was, and we stopped at a gas station because my dad's car had issues, and so he was just at the gas station clearly working on a mechanical issue with his car. And so I go in to get me and my dad food from whatever, like, kind of 7-Eleven style convenience stores there. And the guy sees what's going on outside, so he gives us our food for free. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. But it took my dad long enough to fix the car that at one point he was like, oh, we should get some drinks too, I'm thirsty. And so I went back in again, and I was like, well, I can't. He's not going to do it again, and I can't ask. And so that time he did make me pay, and I was like, that just feels so weird. It felt like that first one was like, that's where the movie should end.
Yeah, that is a weird second interaction. Like,
yeah, having to go to a second interaction, yeah. But yeah, so... How do you feel about this? You know, I like living for stories.
I mean, the person sitting next to him is super obnoxious, but it's very funny. He thinks the flight attendant should have perceived the situation and cut her off. Like, how? Come on, man.
Do we have a gender dynamic? Do we have that she was like a old cougar trying to snuggle up with this young man? Or
I don't know.
Was she an old lezzy?
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that's a little bit like, how much are you expecting from a flight attendant? Like, to cut her off on the first signs of being tipsy, man, if she got too drunk while being calm and then was too drunk, I do not blame the flight attendant for not perceiving that ahead of time.
They knew her and Jack Daniels had a history. Everybody in the plane getting tipsy. Yeah, I,
Isabel has almost this exact same story, except it was a woman behind her.
Oh.
As I was going to pick up Isabel from the airport, I saw a woman in a complete, like, pink tracksuit, like, yelling into her phone. I pick up Isabel, and she's like, there was the weirdest woman on my plane. She was, like, in a pink tracksuit, got too drunk. She was apparently mostly hitting on the guy very loudly next to her. And the guy was uncomfortable. But then she was also, like, other passengers got involved where they were like, he's clearly not into you. Stop talking, please.
Jesus Christ.
And like then the woman would like yell at the other passengers and then continue trying to hit on the guy. I don't know. Isabel made it sound like a real messy situation.
I have a way less interesting version of that where one time two people behind me in a plane were talking and they were having the very basic like, oh, what do you do? Where are you going? Blah, blah, blah. And the only secondhand embarrassment I got was just from how boring they were. I just was like, why are you guys talking so loudly and so boringly?
None of them at any point were like, and I work as a spy for the government.
Yeah. No, it was all real boring shit.
when you overhear somebody on an airplane and it's clear that they think of themselves as a people person or a social person, and it's just like you're hearing them, like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's almost like self-branding or marketing, but it's not even like these people are looking for jobs because they're doing it to strangers. So it's like, why are you talking like you're at a conference? Nobody.
Yeah. I mean, best person to sit next to on a plane, empty chair. Oh my God. Love, especially if you can get your own row. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? I've had my own row on a few plane rides, and that shit's toy. Best neighbor, no neighbors. Just like all my parents always said. That's why we lived out in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
So yeah, what do you think? You should think she should have killed this woman?
No, I think the question asker is right that it's a super obnoxious situation. I think they're
wrong.
What
does it mean to pretend to talk on the phone?
There was some good stuff. What was the other one? It was
she made fun of nearby passengers. That only sucks because usually it's like they want you to like do it with them. That's the issue, is you have to agree with them in order to like get them to stop or whatever.
You see that woman on the next aisle over with a dumb haircut?
Mm-hmm.
You agree it's fucking dumb, right? I can tell you agree. You don't even have to answer.
Now let's snuggle.
What is up with that?
While I spill this water bottle on your pants.
Maybe I'm heartless. If somebody laid their head down on my shoulder that I did not know, I would immediately shake them off. I'm not like doing some sort of nice guy, like, aw, they're tired.
I would probably get a needed shoulder to cry on. It's a quarter after one. I'm a little drunk and I need you now. I wouldn't be able to refuse. Oh, we didn't talk at all about the Mile High Club. How many times have you been?
Is that like one of those lounges that you get if you have a special credit card?
Oh, no, like a Delta lounge?
Yeah.
No, that doesn't count.
What's the Mile High Club?
Well, I don't want to be too heteronormative, but normally it's when peen goes in vagine in the skein.
That's illegal.
Yeah. Is it? I think that's... Now, that's a good question. Is that illegal to put your peen in vagine in the sky?
It is actually quite heteronormative of you. Does, like, mouth and hand stuff not count?
You know, I have heard those stories before. I think sometimes from comedians who, like, fly a lot, where it does seem like... I'm glad I don't have one of those stories of people just jerking each other under a fucking blanket.
This feels like something that was possible in the 90s. I can't even imagine how you begin to think you're getting away with that without just being a weird
pervert. I don't know. I mean, not to get gross or whatever, but I definitely had friends in high school who would talk about like, oh yeah, sometimes my boyfriend fingers me like while we're in the living room with my family, and you're like, hey yo, pause, B.
That is a shockingly common story. That is another example of like, I don't know how you think you're getting away with that. I think you might just be committing a sex crime, making everybody
I think you're
in your family,
making your whole family sad. Yeah.
So many deeply, deeply sad families that are just like, we can't say anything, right? They're just that selfish and weird.
My daughter getting finger blasted right in front of me.
We have a pervert as a child, and she's dating a fellow
sex pervert.
What are we supposed to do about it at this point?
What am I supposed to do?
It was a weirdly common story. What the hell was going on with that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Honestly, parents, that's why you should let them have their partner in their room with the door closed, because if you put in a rule that they can't do that, that's when they start doing that freak shit.
That's when they start doing that freak shit in public. They find out they like it. But anyways, about this woman, about this lady who's drunk. I mean, why not just pretend that you're going to bed and like just, I don't know, close your eyes and don't interact with them? I don't know.
Weaponized sleepiness. Okay, that's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think funny travel stories are good. Airplane stories, not that good, despite what we've been doing this entire episode. None of them are really that interesting. You can get your stories when you're out and about in on your adventure, not when you're traveling on a plane.
Yeah. Should we read the answer?
Yeah, if that's the debate, then my answer is definitely like, just make sure your trip is pleasant next time.
Being airborne for hours next to someone inconsiderate must have been uncomfortable. Particularly the unwanted physical touch and spilled water. For the past few years, air travel has become more fraught for both passengers and flight attendants alike due to bad behavior, delays, and cancellations. Passengers expect a hassle-free experience, and flight attendants aim to ensure passenger safety and comfort. In your case, neither of these expectations could be fulfilled because the hassle turned out to be a person seated next to you. Though flight crews have more authority than passengers when it comes to quelling bad behavior, they are they too are limited in what they can do. Let's say that they had cut off the passenger's alcohol supply earlier. Though that might have encouraged her to sober up, flight attendants say it usually doesn't go down too well. Almost everyone argues and insists they are fine, wrote veteran flight attendant Christy Corbell in the New York Times. If things escalate, we inform them that their disruptive behavior could be in violation of federal law and that we could arrange law enforcement to meet them when we land. In your case, the passenger might have expressed her displeasure in more acute ways than spilling water on your pants. Some of us get loud and animated with alcohol. Others slip into a deep slumber. It's possible the flight crew was choosing among the best of a set of imperfect choices and continuing to quietly serve her. Beyond plane journeys, your question makes me think of the expectations of seamless comfort. Much of our everyday lives can now be enhanced for maximum predictability. Whether we are ordering dinner or making a major purchase, we can interact with only those we want to in the process. We can remove inconveniences with a simple search and swipe. While I too appreciate predictability, I wonder what this increasingly curated reality means for our ability to navigate travel when life may be messier. Mm. When we travel, we enter situations that are new to us and usually cannot be managed with the tap of a screen. The excitement can be wonderful and lead to amazing new connections, but sometimes the opposite happens. How might we traverse moments of inconvenience and exasperation? The world is inhabited by people who are flawed and wondrous, wounded and delightful. Perhaps the tipsy passenger was navigating her own messiness that day, and what showed up in her behavior was all she could muster. Perhaps the flight was understaffed and the crew was dealing with even worse behavior elsewhere on the plane. Considering these factors doesn't mean that you must like what showed up next to you. You are entitled to feel irritated at a passenger's behavior and with the flight attendant for not intervening more effectively. How great would it have been to swipe left and order a new seatmate? I gently invite you to think of this incident, as your friend suggests, as a funny travel story. This reframe may give it less charge and cause less suffering to you now. You already had to endure the passenger's behavior and change into dry pants on the flight. Why prolong the distress? There are far too many incidents that could have crossed over into funny story about an irritating flight category. Be grateful that your neighbor's behavior did not escalate in too terrible a way, and find ways to laugh at the ridiculous situation. They say travel is about embracing the unexpected. In your case, the unexpected tried to embrace you.
Oh, I might have just said something too short. I don't know. All right. How'd you feel about that?
I like parts of it. I didn't like the thing. I always hate the advice of imagine somebody's day as bad to, I don't know, make yourself feel better. That's always stupid to me. I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, maybe their grandma died today, so that's why they're acting shitty. Okay. I don't know. That just feels like, what is this little game I'm playing in my head? But I did agree with the part about, yeah, sometimes when you're in public around other people, the world's a little messy.
Interesting. That was the part that I didn't like.
Oh, really?
I didn't like the part that was all, ooh, you guys in your phones, you guys think you get to just swipe and have a new person sitting next to you these days, can't handle any inconvenience. It's actually a crazy expectation to think that you should be able to fly somewhere without it being a day ruiner.
I think I agree with you that it's not a big expectation to expect it to be calm and normal, but it's also like, because it got ruined, the fact that it's anybody's fault but the person who had bad behavior is odd to me. It doesn't. And I think the original question asker was demanding that the airline or the stewardess or the flight crew fix it. And that's where it felt like, I don't know, like that's not an authority who can make everybody on a plane behave well. That's like, that's the wrong authority to appeal to.
All right, yeah.
And that just felt to me a little bit like, I'm a customer and I deserve to, it's like, yeah, sure, but like, you can't, as a customer, I don't know, control other customers. It's a weird thing to demand that the airline control.
All right. Yeah, sure. I agree enough with that. Anything else about the answer?
No, a little wordy.
Cool. All right. You want to get in my call? Ask Sarah, I feel guilty about flying. Help. Advice for a reader who is worried about the climate impact of air travel. From someone with just the most adorable little name, Sarah Peach, February 13th, 2019. This is what she was doing before Valentine's Day? Sarah, hit me up. You got better things to be doing. Dear Sarah, last year, my partner and I began planning to travel across the country for a wedding of his old friend. Our plan was we'd take 2 weeks, take Amtrak, maybe splurge on a sleeper car, but now the date of the wedding approaches and we have less money and time than we expected. Also a factor, an older relative of mine who also lives across the country is ill and needs a visit 1 month before said wedding. I haven't been on a plane in 3 years, and I was hoping to keep it that way. We bought plane tickets to visit the relative. My partner has ruled out the train for himself for the wedding. He can't afford the absurd cost, $1,000 of the sleeper car, and 4 days total upright in a chair is too much discomfort. Amtrak looks so bogus in this context that I'm inclined to agree with him. Taking the train doesn't make sense in any other way than environmental. But I'm having major guilt and stress as I consider flying across the country twice in 2 months. Should I skip it? Should I shut up and fly? How do you mitigate the harm? From Earthbound and Torn. Did I tell you that I looked up Amtrak to Chicago as an alternative to flying?
Whoa, that's insanity.
Yeah. No, it's exactly what they said. You're paying a lot of money to do a 4 day trip sitting upright in a chair. It's insane.
Yeah. I did 10-hour Amtrak, and that wasn't like it wasn't undoable, but it was definitely pretty annoying. Yeah, that was DC to Greenville, which. I don't know. I would do it again, depending on the situation. I think the problem is the flights are so cheap. It feels so
ridiculous. Yeah, that's
ridiculous.
The thing. Like, I just don't see what the point of it is for paying about as much, or if not more, to take longer.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point's usually environmental, right?
Well, yeah, I guess that's what we're talking about. You have a plane, an aviophobic GF?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She likes taking the train when possible, but she does take the plane pretty frequently, so.
I thought she normally bikes.
Yeah, I don't think those are, like, fungible transportation methods.
She doesn't bike to Texas? She flies? That's crazy.
Her sister did bike from Texas to Alaska.
Really?
Yeah.
Why have I never heard this story before? That's so cool.
I don't know. Not usually telling these sisters stories.
Was it an e-bike or was it, like, just full-on, like, leg power?
It was full-on leg power, except it was, like, a group of 20 people, and I think it was, like, or maybe 5 people, and it was, like, you know, every however many days you would drive the van with all the supplies.
Oh, interesting. During the... What kind of life does she live where she has the time and money to
I think that was, like, after college. She has a very normal, like, 9-to-5.
Gotcha.
I think that was, like, the year graduating college.
Instead of backpacking through Europe, she was like, I'm going to ride to Alaska.
Yeah, I guess so.
Cool. Good for the environment. I think we've talked about that before, the argument of like, oh yeah, well you can bike instead of driving, but because you exercise, that means you eat more calories, and depending on what you eat, that means what you're doing
there's
is actually
no way
worse
that's
for the environment.
Actually, no way that actually ends up being worse for the environment. That's so
But have you ever
asinine.
Heard people try and make that argument though?
If somebody tried to make that argument, it's like, just shut up. You're a dumb person.
That's a good way to shut them up, yeah. That's a way to win the argument, I guess, in Paul's eyes. Not to
oh, yeah,
debate
yeah, yeah.
Them.
I'm going to actually pull out my calculator and start doing some, like caloric calculations.
Yeah.
It so obviously would not add up. It's blatant. You don't know? You agree with those people? You think that's a smart idea?
No, of course not. That's just someone who's trying to be a contrarian. So what should this person do?
Fly.
Twice?
By twice, do you mean with the boyfriend or there and back counts as twice?
No, that's what she's saying. She has to fly to see the relative and she has to fly to go to the wedding.
So why is flying to see the relative? Okay, I misunderstood. Her partner has ruled out the train. He's definitely flying.
Yeah.
But she might take the train behind him?
No. I think she's
no,
also
she's already made the decision. She just has major guilt about it.
Well, either that or she's not going to see her older relative who might be dying. Should you just hope that he makes it another month? Squeeze that in?
Oh, you think it's across the country in the same place?
Maybe close enough that you could, you know, do a stop by and then go. Because I don't know why it's your responsibility to visit him exactly 1 month before this wedding that you also have planned. That seems oddly specific.
How would you mitigate the harm? I think sometimes you've got to just eat the bullet and not mitigate the harm. I mean...
But you gotta give them a good answer, though. You gotta at least give them, like, a, hey, Taylor Swift uses her private jet more than you're ever gonna expel carbon in your life.
We should soothe their consciousness.
Oh, yeah. You got to do that thing like, what was that website for a while where, like, you reduce your carbon footprint by, like, subsidizing wind farmers in other parts of the country or something like that?
I mean, that's just carbon credits. I mean, companies do that all the time, and I guess it is an option for you as a person. The problem with carbon credits is that they're mostly bullshit. Should I bring Isabel in here? Somebody wants to fly across the country, and Adrian was saying buy carbon credits.
What up, Izzy?
Hey, Adrian, how's it going?
Good, wait, I like that shirt.
No niceties, get into it.
All right, now explain to me why this person should not just offset their carbon footprint from flying by buying or helping or subsidizing someone who's doing some good work or whatever.
Most credits are either backed by renewable energy and infrastructure or like tree plantings, and they're nature-based. That's like 80% of what's in the carbon market right now. And both of like the ways that they've like created those credits, it's like not additional. So the, like to say like you're offsetting like an emission, you have to like achieve this thing called additionality, which is like that emission reduction would never have happened if not for the carbon credit. So that's just like a really important tenet of carbon crediting. But these like renewable energy and nature-based solution credits often aren't additional. Like renewable energy investments would have happened because they're just very lucrative right now. And those nature-based solutions, either they're like, they would have happened, or the forest burns down, so they don't even exist anymore. And then on top of that, like they can, they're just like the nature-based solutions, especially have a lot of human rights issues with them. So they have often like established these carbon crediting forests on indigenous land, and they've been used to like justify like taking over. Native
land grabs.
Yeah, they like for land grabs. So there's like a huge question around like indigenous sovereignty with these credits, because like a government that's helping to produce them can just like be like, that's our land now for carbon crediting. So they're like, they're controversial, but some people think that the only way we're gonna like, there's no other income stream for nature-based solutions, and so people are like, what else can we do besides like have these carbon credits and get some mangrove forest?
All right, well, Toots, let me explain to you direct carbon capture. So what we're going to do is pipelines, but for carbon, and then we're going to pump it into the shale, and then the carbon will not be in the environment anymore. Have you heard of that, Izzy?
Yeah, that's a
maybe if you're saying, a real environmentalist, you'd know about
it. You're saying, why don't we take the carbon and move it over there?
They literally do. We're going to pump it into the ground. We're going to create pipelines of carbon from fossil fuel. Oh, Isabel was saying the other part of it is that sometimes they talk about using the carbon to frack for more oil. So they're pumping the carbon into the ground to frack for the oil and then leave it in the ground.
Nice.
It's science, Adrian. And I assume this person on YaleConnections.com is supportive of all of this, because she's going to be using carbon credits that you support, Adrian. Isabel, did you have any other ideas for somebody who's worried about flying because of the carbon footprint? Other than buying carbon credits?
And biking.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than nothing, I guess. I don't know.
Isabel said it's better than nothing, I guess.
But
okay, so she's pro-buying carbon credits.
But interesting. Just don't go on the trip. I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to police what people
do. Her family is sick, Isabel. Isabel said don't go on the trip. She said let them die alone.
I didn't know that context.
Just get out of here.
Oh, actually, I do have a suggestion.
Okay, come say it to the mic if you have a suggestion.
Okay,
speaking
so
of that thing right
there.
There
are, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, there are certain carbon credit agencies that are more reputable than others. So they like have higher, like, they have a lot higher standards for.
Name some.
Okay, so the gold standard's probably the best one. Do not buy credits backed by Vera. They are fake. I would go, if you're looking for, like, some type of credit to buy by the gold standard.
Is that, can consumers buy those direct? They don't sell just to companies?
No, they work with a broker. So I guess it depends on what airline.
So I need to find a broker.
No, well, the airline
will sell me gold standard credits.
Well, the airline maybe, I've never bought carbon credits, but I assume the airline works with some type of broker.
Yeah,
who's
they don't tell
them.
You what broker and agency they're working with.
They probably, you can find out on the gold standard. They keep a database of all the credits they've sold.
Okay.
So again, this is onerous for the regular
That feels
consumer.
Like it should be internal.
Just don't buy from Vera. Vera's really bad.
I didn't know you had a libertarian GF always talking about going to the gold standard.
Always on about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, don't buy from Vera, buy from the gold standard. Mm. And she was talking about the free marketplace of carbon credits. Wait, why did we not think of Drive? Rent a car.
Faster than train. It is terrible, though. It sucks.
Yeah, but you have two people. You can do the nap and drive switch off and do it in a day and a half.
I don't know, man. I've done it twice, and I really don't want to do it again.
I guess at least on the train, you can zone out the entire... No, the train would be miserable for 4 days. I don't think that would be much better.
Yeah, I don't know. Shrink the U.S. Take both of the ends of it and push them together.
Ooh, boat. Go Greta.
Ooh, go Greta, yeah.
Go Greta on day Freedom ass.
Boat. Go Greta on day ass. That's what I always say. That's my advice to everybody. Go Greta on day ass. All right, let's see. The answer. Dear Earthbound and Torn, go Greta on their ass. One Christmas season a few years ago, I took Amtrak all the way from Durham, North Carolina to Bosstown, where my... Oh, to Boston.
Raleigh, North Carolina.
To Beantown, to Boston, where my parents live, and back again. In many ways, it was a relaxing trip. I didn't have to squeeze my shampoo into a 3-ounce bottle, stand in a long security line, or remove my shoes in public. Oh my god, the greatest inconveniences? Fuck off. I feel like they're really trying hard to sell the Amtrak if that's what they're going for. Instead, I got to spend time with my friends and family in Washington, D.C., where I stopped for the night on both my northbound and southbound journeys. Still,
okay, that means they did like a 5-hour trip and then a 3-hour trip. That's so different than a 4-day trip.
Yeah.
They did a 5-hour trip, got to have dinner with their family, then the next day got up and did a 3-hour trip. That is definitely such a different situation that this person is in.
Still, the price of the train ticket was no cheaper than a flight to Boston, so I didn't save money. And the round-trip journey took 4 days, including 2 overnights in D.C. That's a burden, given the standard flying time for a direct flight between Raleigh, Durham, and Boston is only 2 hours. God, yeah, she's not selling it at all. But I chose to travel the slow way because, like you, I feel guilty about my personal carbon footprint. For readers who are new to the idea of a carbon footprint, it's a way of framing our individual complicity in the problem of climate change, by totaling the amount of meat we eat, the miles we drive, the distance we fly, and so on. We can measure how much heat-trapping pollution each of us is responsible for causing. If you want Paul and Adrian's takes on that subject, you can look up one of our old episodes about climate shaming. If you play around with a carbon footprint calculator like this one, you'll see that flying is almost among the most climate-polluting activities you can undertake. In fact, your share of the carbon pollution from a single round-trip flight across the U.S. exceeds the amount that the average person in India produces during an entire year, according to one calculator. Three bad options. Earthbound and Torn. Your first option is to fly, but there is no getting around it. Jets release gases that heat the planet, contributing to a problem that has already made extreme events like the extraordinary flooding in the Carolinas during Hurricane Florence last fall, and the recent destruction caused by California wildfires more likely. Amtrak trains are less polluting than planes, but as you suspect, they can be uncomfortable on a cross-country trip. As one regular Amtrak rider writes, absent the sleeper car, a long train journey will make you want to rip your eyes out and fling them into a passing landscape. The problem is that your third option, to cancel your trips, comes at a high cost. To tell an ailing relative, no, I will not come to you when you need me, and to tell your partner, no, I will not stand with you as you celebrate love with an old friend, is tantamount to saying that you are not a full participant in your community. You must choose the least bad of three unpleasant options. No wonder you feel guilty and stressed. That's why I gently suggest that we all try reframing the problem. Instead of placing the blame for climate change on individual choices, let's examine the context in which those choices get made. The context in the U.S. is one of heavy investment in interstate highways and airports, but not in high-speed rail or inner-city buses. Other countries, by contrast, have been constructing the high-speed rail infrastructure for decades. In China, rail passengers can travel from Shanghai to Beijing, which are roughly the same distance from each other as Durham and Boston, in as little as 4.5 hours. That's not bad, considering how much time is usually spent waiting at airports. In many regions of the U.S., there's little political will for investment in high-speed rail projects, which are expensive. But the U.S. has also chosen to invest relatively little in inner-city buses, even though they might be easier to integrate into our existing transportation networks. For what it's worth, a bus is by far the lowest carbon way to travel, absolutely crushing Amtrak. Buses have a deservedly bad reputation for being uncomfortable, but a dedicated effort could make them better. A startup company in California, for example, is marketing its bus line between San Francisco and Los Angeles as a cushy rolling hotel. Earthbound and Torn. If you had a comfortable, affordable, low-carbon option for traveling a long distance by ground, you would choose it. But right now, the choice isn't available to you. But what are you looking up that's so much more important than the answer?
I was looking up that bus service.
Ah, okay. Why canceling won't help. Let's look more closely at another of your bad options, taking a lonely stand against air travel by canceling one or both of your trips. I'm assuming it's not logistically feasible to combine the two journeys. The most likely outcome is that your planes will still depart, because other passengers are unlikely to alter their travel plans. You'll suffer the social costs of absenting yourself, with zero benefits to the atmosphere. This is the Achilles heel of focusing on individual carbon footprints. It's difficult to get people to alter their behavior if they believe others won't. That's particularly true if there's a personal cost to the behavior change. Said Jan Bruckner, an economist at the University of California, Irvine. Relying on altruistic behavior is just not the way to tackle the global warming problem, he told me in a recent interview. You need government policies to induce mass changes in behavior, not individual ones. Bruckner's preferred answer to the problem is a carbon tax. Impose a fee on sources of carbon dioxide, such as jet fuel, he explained, and the price of airline tickets will increase, nudging everyone, not just altruistic people, to fly less. He wants to make flights more expensive? This guy sucks. Bruckner isn't alone for... Oh, wait, does Izzy have a hot take on carbon taxes?
I don't know. I'd have to bring her back in, but I'll let her study for the GRE.
Bruckner isn't alone in calling for political, not individual, change. Efforts at ethical consumerism are not only small in scale relative to the overall problem, they in many cases won't work at all. Writer Matthew Iglesias argued recently at Vox, your favorite dude. The problem requires systematic change that only government intervention can make. What you can do. Earthbound and Torn. Because you don't have an attractive low-carbon option for visiting your relative or attending the wedding, my advice is to book your ticket, and then do your part to make better transportation available in the future. Instead of spending your energy on guilt and stress, try channeling it toward action. You might begin by learning more about policy options under discussion right now at the federal level. One is the Green New Deal resolution, which calls for investment in high-speed rail. Another is a bill, recently reintroduced into the House, that would tax carbon sources. There are also great efforts at the state and regional level to improve high-speed rail. Oh god, there's more. Okay, god damn it. Next.
Okay,
they're
about to quote Iglesias again. Are they fucking kidding me? Shut the fuck. That guy's a moron.
Hey,
can you at least
give it a second?
Could they at least find a quote from like one of the smart Vox guys? Do they really have to pick the annoying dumb Vox guy? There's a bunch of them that believe
Ezra
the same thing. Yeah, pick him. At least he's not a moron.
Next, learn more about your leader's positions on transportation and let them know how you feel. Iglesias at Vox offers this advice. It's helpful, genuinely, to make phone calls and even write letters to elected officials explaining why you are voting the way you are voting. And ordinary citizens can make meaningful contributions to elections they can't vote in directly by contacting acquaintances who live in swing districts, volunteering to phone bank or knock on doors, or even, most basically, by donating money. A word about long-haul flights. So far, I haven't addressed a truly sticky problem. At a regional scale, buses, trains, and cars can be used as alternatives to planes. And they may become a more preferred option if airline ticket prices rise and ground transportation improves. But over transcontinental distances, trains can't, and likely won't, transport people as quickly as planes can. And for overseas flights, there is no viable substitute. But attempts to impose supranational regulations on airlines, which would be necessary to address emissions from international travel, are politically unpopular, said Scott Cohen, who researches tourism and transportation at the University of Surrey. There's a lack of appetite for that type of regulation because mobility that's facilitated by air travel is viewed as a fundamental human right. In other words, regulations on international travel are unlikely to materialize in the near future, leaving us back close to where we started, suggesting that people voluntarily reduce their long-distance air travel. But even here, there are ways to work with others, rather than as an individual. For example, you might add your name to a list of people who are pledging to fly less often, such as this group of Earth scientists, other academics, and members of the public. Best of luck to your sick relative, and I hope the wedding is joyous. From Sarah. Note added 2/18/19. I've received questions from many of you about offsets. How effective are they? Do they solve the moral dilemma of flying in the age of climate change? I'll address those questions and more in a future column. In the meantime, feel free to send me your thoughts.
Okay, the person who was quoting Matthew Iglesias is definitely going to be pro-carbon offsets, just to be clear.
What do you mean?
Do you not know who Matthew Yglesias is?
She's an environmental journalist who's appeared in the National Geographic, Scientific American.
Wait, where are you reading that Matthew Yglesias is an environmental journalist? He's claimed to be a lot of things.
Sarah Peach, the writer. Yeah, so what'd you think of that?
Bullshit.
What? You going biggity, biggity, biggity bullshit?
Top to bottom.
T to B, biggity B?
I'm sorry. You quote Maddie G twice, I'm out.
Maddie
Y. I guess it quotes Maddie Y. No, but it's Yglesias. It's Maddie G.
Maddie, it starts with a Y.
It's Maddie G.
Paul don't know how to spell.
The Y gets added to the mat. Obviously, it's Maddie G.
Oh, okay.
What'd you think of that answer?
Really talked about, there was some China glazing. There was some living.
I did like the thing about luxury bus rides. There's no way those go across the country, but I did look it up and there's this
Greyhound? I guess it's not luxury. That one's the opposite.
No, that's like the classic kind of shitty one. But the jet was one that's around like DC and NYC. That seems pretty cool.
Do they like paint like flames on the sides of the buses and stuff like that to make them all cool?
No, but it looks like it just has like a little area in the back that's like a little kitchen and nice cushiony seats with tons of legroom. And it's $100 to go from DC to NYC. It does seem like a pretty optimal way to travel.
I mean, when I was in Argentina, I not only took a flight while in Argentina, but we also did a bus ride to get to Mar del Plata. And honestly, that rocked. That bus was awesome. Besides the one part where it broke down and we had to like really scurry to get on the bus that was coming to save us while there were still seats there. Aside from that, it's actually a very nice, like you're just in a big recliner seat. Imagine being in a movie theater seat for like 4 hours. It's not that bad. But yeah, I mean, so do you agree with the idea that she just kind of has to do the airplane and then... maybe she can do some credits or something. Yeah.
I guess do one of the good carbon credits.
Oh, yeah. I like that it didn't have... I don't remember if we agreed in that episode or not, but I was very anti, and I am still very anti, individual solutions to climate change.
Sure, but I do think that there's... when people say that about, like, people who are going vegetarian, like, yeah, right, you're going to make a difference, I do think there's something to be said about, like, you change your own lifestyle as a way to like invigorate people to care about the issue.
You're just doing a Gandhi?
Is that what Gandhi said?
Yeah, be the change that you want to see in the world.
It's not necessarily like a philosophical thing.
I think right before that
thing,
though, he said, and also I sleep with young underage girls naked with me to tempt me and prove my loyalty to God.
That is a weird detail about him. I don't know why you had to bring it up right now. We're
we'll
not that type
that
of podcast.
Part of the quote.
We're not an anti-Indian independence podcast, no matter how much you like the British Empire, Adrian.
No.
All right, whatever. Do you want to get to the third segment?
Okay, yeah. What was the third segment again? I completely forgot.
Oh, I texted it to you. So we're going to go through. Adrian, have you ever heard of these subreddits?
Right.
Have you ever heard of unethical life pro tips?
Oh, yeah, it gets recommended to me. I'm not subscribed to it, but sometimes I see them. What do I know about it? I know sometimes they do intrigue me, and people do get, it's one of those ones where it's like the cringe TikTok subreddit where people will be like, this TikTok isn't cringe or whatever, but people will get really on to people being like, you can't do that. That's what a bad person would do. And they're like, hey, check the name of the sub, dog.
I've never really been on it. I knew of the concept and I was thinking this must be the type of thing where people have a lot of airport tips. I think the reason stuff like this doesn't appeal to me is because I think from when I first heard of it, you do a cursory glance and like 90% of it isn't even like really workable stuff. It's like stuff where you go, oh, people would just notice you doing that and you'd feel like an asshole or you'd get told to stop. Like it's stuff that works almost in the mind of a child, which I guess is probably the problem with like regular life pro tips where it's like sometimes you read them and you're like, that seems like somebody who's never engaged with that system at all thinks that would work. That would not work.
You
like, you'd be told
you don't think
to
if
stop.
You, if you ask for your fries without salt at McDonald's, it doesn't mean you get a fresh batch because they have to make a new one.
Yeah, some of that stuff, it's like, obviously, you're probably just going to get them with salt anyway. Or, you know, or you're going to... or that one is stupid because it's like, you're going to take way longer to get them than you would have. What, you want to be spending 20 extra minutes at McDonald's just to get slightly warmer fries?
Then they're hot and fresh, baby.
Like, either way, it's like, this seems like a dumb person would do this and quickly realize, like, oh, I shouldn't do this. It's just making my life harder or more uncomfortable, not cooler. I'm not getting away with a sick scam asking for no salt.
Now that you've made fun of it, what's your favorite unethical pro tip?
I don't know if I have one. I think I've mostly avoided it. But I did search airports, and I see that there are a lot, so I wanted to review them. I think what was the ranking you came up with for them?
Costanza to something? Because I looked through like the first three of them, and I was like, this seems like a Seinfeld episode.
We'll do George Costanza certified if we think it would actually work.
All right, cool. Let's do it.
Airport lounges. Club-level seating and public transit are easy targets. Already don't like how that's worded. Easy targets for what? Your next victim?
Yeah.
They're basically just saying you can sneak into lounges and most people won't check. For airport lounges, they're saying that they're self-serve bars. And you should just have the confidence to walk by the table while it's crowded or act like you're winding down from a business call. I could see this working, but it wouldn't be foolproof and it would be so uncomfortable when you got caught. I wouldn't try it for that reason. Would you? This is Costanza certified. I could see him trying it for a Seinfeld episode.
I could maybe try and feign ignorance in a way that might work for me.
Just play the like, oh, this was a lounge? Oh, yeah, no, sorry, I'm not a member. I thought this was a nice room of the airport. I thought you guys had nice areas.
There was one time where I tried one of these where it wasn't even an unethical pro tip. It was like just a thing people tell you. Have you ever heard that thing about like if you don't have a Costco membership, you can still go in if you say that you're going there to like get alcohol or something like that?
Oh, no. I've heard that you can get a gift card. Which is what my parents have done for me before.
I did that with a friend where we were going in to buy stuff for a grad group thing. And she was like, oh, we need to wait for whatever to get here. They actually have the Costco card. And I was like, oh, no. If you go in and tell them this thing or whatever, they'll let you in. And so we literally walked in. I tell that to the front person. And they're like, yeah, you guys still need a card. But if you're waiting on somebody, you guys can wait. I'll let you guys in. But like, yeah, you can't just come in like that regularly. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. It was one of the most embarrassing things that ever happened to me.
So you wouldn't try this personally?
I think I'm too scarred from that situation.
All right, do you want to go to the next one?
Have you ever tried doing the getting the same stamp or wristband or whatever that like companies use to prove that you're a member or whatever? It's like, you know, you probably got them from Amazon. You could probably buy a pack of like yellow wristbands.
They're gonna be like, you didn't eat 10 sandwiches from here, but your card is stamped 10 times. Okay.
And we have our special highly proprietary stamp that we use.
It's a heart shape. There's no way you could fake that. It's not a little just a regular.
It's definitely not just from Office Depot. Unethical life pro tip. If you ever find yourself stuck overnight in an airport, most airports have a prayer room with comfortable spots to rest and a soothing atmosphere, allowing you to get a good night's sleep. And this one's nice because it's just the headline. There's no description.
This would work because there's no way they're checking. And even if they did, hey, I pray to the god of sleep.
Wait, I kind of like this. I did this with my wife once and woke up at 6 a.m. to a group prayer. We were so confused. I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah, I wonder if every airport has this or just, like, I don't know. I've never actually run past the prayer room.
Yeah. For me, I'm just never really trying to sleep at the airport. I'm never there overnight. So I'm fine with just sitting. What's the next one? Oh, this was your favorite, yeah.
In the airport, when you turn in your bags, push the scale upwards with your feet.
The scale can have a small space between it and the ground, where you can put the tip of your shoe, pushing it upwards. This will make it slightly lower weight.
This is not Costanza certified. You'd get caught immediately. What a dumbass thing to do.
I've never run into the old style of scales, only the conveyor style. I think this is more embarrassing than the other one about getting caught. If you get caught doing this, I would just leave. I would just be like, I guess I'm not going wherever I'm going.
It's first off, I think if you get caught doing this one, unlike the club one, there's no like, oh yeah, I was being cheeky. This is like, I was actively trying to scam you. This is so much more like they might actually try to punish you.
It's called a prayer room, but it's a multi-purpose room from what it seems like people are saying. You're allowed to be there. You're not like, it's not an exclusive club.
Yeah.
But also, this one, yeah, I don't know. Have you ever had a thing with, because you fly internationally a few times, with the being really careful about how much your bag weighs or whatever?
Yeah. That was a big thing for
me.
Yeah,
I had one once where I was flying back to California, and my checked bag was 51 pounds instead of 50. And so I was already a little bit late for my flight, so I started freaking out trying to get stuff out of my bag and switch them around. And the lady who, like, was looking at my bag and doing the weighing and stuff was like, 1 pound is not that much, sir. And I was like, hey, if it's not that big of a deal, then why did you make it a big deal? You're stressing me out. You can't tell me something stressful like...
What
did
she mean by that? That it's not a big deal, like you should just pay or what?
No, she was like, you don't need to take that much stuff out of your bag. You can take like half of that out, move it to your other bag, and you're fine. And I was like, you can't tell me it's not a big deal after making it a big deal.
You got called out.
For not knowing what a pound is? No, I don't know. It was just like, I don't know. I didn't like that attitude.
That is funny, though. Yeah, it's not that much. Then why can't the plane handle it?
Why can't the plane be fine with the extra pound? why is that being in my check bag and not in my carry-on or whatever? Why is that the difference between whether or not we die?
No, this is so stupid. What are the comments saying? Is anybody saying?
I think they're mostly pointing out that they don't have that same kind of weight or scale thing.
One person once said, name a single airport that has that kind of scale and got downvoted, even though that seems like a very good point to me. And the OP replied with Santiago, Chile. Okay.
Oh, I was there. That's where I went.
And did they have old school scales you could step your foot under?
It wouldn't surprise me. It was pretty small. It was really beautiful, though. Not the actual airport, but the view from the airport. Okay, the next one is save hundreds and at airport parking lots. Park in the short term for as long as you want for $40 a day. When you go to leave, wait for a busy time when a bunch of flights and parking attendants are overwhelmed and underpaid. Tell the parking attendant you lost your ticket and that you arrived earlier that day. The max charge for a lost ticket is often equal to one 24-hour period, so $40.
I could see this working. It was posted 6 years ago, though, and I feel like they do have cameras and stuff now for exactly this situation.
Probably, but there's also this common thread of, like, this only works if you go at the busiest time. And it's like, okay, well, like, I don't know. What am I supposed to do? Plan my trip around being there at the busiest time?
I guess even back then they knew that if it wasn't too busy, they could double check somehow. And so they would. Yeah, maybe they would ask to see your ticket or something. Well, I don't know.
Won't work. They inventory every night. Not at JFK. Interesting.
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of these, like, pro tips are like, and it's kind of like the last one about, like, oh, it works in Santiago, Chile. And it's like, okay, but your initial comment didn't say that. Don't you think it's so much worse to try it and not happen to be in one of the few places where it works?
Dude, it's one of those ones where it's actually pretty high up and you're trying to lift up your leg to try it.
You know what I'm saying? It's like when somebody calls them out, it's like, oh, this wouldn't really work. And they get defensive and they're like, in this very specific situation, it would. It's like, but then it just really doesn't work unless you, I don't know. It's like you're stretching to make it seem like it's a good idea when it clearly is not a good idea. I could, maybe, this is like 50% Costanza. What do you think?
I think Costanza would get this advice, do it, and then get proven wrong that you can do it, but I don't think it's a very Costanza idea.
This next one is funny. It's a request. I didn't know that was part of the Unethical Life Pro Tip subreddit.
Oh, yeah, these freaks are crazy.
Request, how to deliberately lose my luggage at an airport. He broke a piece of equipment from his company.
That's so funny. So his hope is that he can purposely lose his luggage and lose the equipment.
Why is losing it better than breaking it? Is it either way it was your incompetence?
No, because what, you check a bag and the airport loses it? That's not your fault.
Oh, have the airport lose. Okay, gotcha,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Although other people are saying, just say that the luggage handlers were really rough with it or something like that.
There might be insurance for that, though, which I guess is a good thing. I don't know.
Hire a meth head to pick up your luggage from baggage claim. Pay them with meth.
Yeah, that's... why was that upvoted? Is that... that must be, like... a joke, right? That's supposed to be like funny.
That must be some kind of like haha, some kind of hoo hoo hoo. I don't know. I've been very lucky that I've never had lost luggage at an airport. Honestly, it's kind of like one of those like background fears that like I don't actively feel at any point, but like if it happened to me, I would feel so annoyed.
Grab your bag. Can you grab your bag and then call the airline from home and say you must have grabbed someone else's bag that looked like yours? Report yours missing. If you want the bag back, if they want the bag back, return it with some meaningless clothes in it. Remove the tag. Now yours is officially missing, and it accounts for you not reporting it immediately at the airport.
Ooh.
These people are diabolical. I think that would work.
But that also makes you incompetent, though. That's part that still puts the blame on you, then.
Oh, because you grabbed the wrong bag, meaning. Yeah, that does put it back on you.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about that one, Chief. Let's see, how to ensure my bag doesn't get gate checked at the airport. Well, here's an unethical pro tip from Dora Lee, where Have you ever gotten the, we're out of space, so we're going to check bags, we're going to go ahead and put a thing on for you, and then just leave it at the gate?
I get that all the time. I hate it, because obviously it means that, like, it's like, oh, man, I didn't check a bag at the front because I wanted to get out of here quick.
When that happened to Dora Lee, she just rips off the tag and then takes it with her.
Oh.
Yeah.
That
worked for her.
Unethical life pro tip.
Want to skip security at the airport? Request a wheelchair. I found this out when I hurt my knee and needed to catch a flight. The security line was super long, and I knew I wouldn't be able to stand for that long. I found a worker and requested a wheelchair. They took me out of line, and within 5 minutes, I had the wheelchair, and we were able to cut in line of everybody. I was at the gate within 15 minutes. I had no visible injury at all, nor did I provide paperwork. So the next time I had to fly, I tried it again, and it worked.
I guess it would work. It really is something that's kind of just on the honor system. But I do think that if you're running really late for a flight and you talk to the front counter, sometimes they'll do similar things to get you to your flight quickly.
Oh, yeah. That happened to me when I was coming back from Argentina, where a guy was going to miss his flight, and he asked the security what to do, and he was like, start asking the people ahead of you if you can bump them because your flight's about to happen. So he asks me, who's right ahead of him, they're like, you got to go further than that. You got to start moving through people right now if you're going to get to your flight. Can't ask each person
taking
individually.
Too long. He asks each person with the longest speech. He's like, mayhaps I can have a moment of your time, good sir.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a tale to tell. M'lady. I'm traveling from here, Chile, Santiago.
Well, this was in Buenos Aires, but yeah. Or maybe somewhere else on the way there.
Buenos Aires, Argentina. And I would like to eventually arrive at my destination at the Big Apple, New York, like, City.
They had to, like, I mean, I kind of agreed with them because he asked me and I just literally gave him the motion of, like, keep moving forward. Because I was right in front of him. I heard him explain everything and get the advice from the security. Like, I knew what was going on. You didn't need to ask me. Go out of earshot and then start asking people. But anyways. I like this wheelchair idea.
I feel like if you even just told the, like, American Airlines person at the front, I feel like I've seen them be like, oh, this guy needs to get through security. And they've just, like, opened the ribbon. Like, you know, the person who checks at the front of the TSA line just opened the ribbon and let them through. Maybe, I don't know, maybe
nice
they're
try, Al-Qaeda.
Not always as cool about that, but I feel like I've seen them kind of usher people through security quickly.
And you've seen them mostly do that for white women, not people who look like us.
Fair enough.
They not like
but
us.
People who look like us are allowed to break their ankle and get through quick. Oh, this one. When picking someone up from the airport, tell them to go to the rideshare curb. It's almost always less crowded than the arrival terminals, and probably no one will check if you have an Uber or Lyft sticker on your car.
Wait, how far down have you gone? Where's that one?
I don't know. I just kept scrolling.
Oh, shit. I didn't know you were that far ahead of me. Okay. I mean, yeah, sure. I guess. What are they going to do? What's the punishment for that?
Are
What's
they really
the allowable
less busy? I've never
that?
Clocked that. I've never been like, ooh, that looks like a fun place to be. There's nobody there.
I think it depends on the airport. I wish there was an unethical pro tip for how to handle being in the San Francisco airport where they're so fucking crazy about, like, you can't stall at all. You need to be picking someone up actively or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in the SAC airport, it's small enough where people just, like, hide out in a bush. They'll literally just, like, take their car on the side of the road on, like, one of the weird outer parts of it. And then once they're ready to go, they go.
That's what I was going to say. Some airports like Charlotte have I guess it's called like a phone area where it's like you can park your car and just sit in it at the airport, which is nice. But some of them, it's like I either don't know where that is or I'm just, you know, I don't clock it or something. And then I'm like, what do I do? Just wrap around 100 times?
Just keep going back around, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I like this one. Before checking in at the airport, take a photograph of your luggage, but put all of your expensive stuff on top, even if you're not taking it with you. A picture is worth 1,000 words if your bag gets lost.
Oh, damn.
That's a smart idea. That's a good way to get double of everything you own. That's expensive.
And then lose it on purpose by paying a meth head to come steal your bag. A lot of unethical life pro tips seems like insurance fraud. How to?
Well, this one's kind of like that. They're saying use a CPAP travel bag to carry extra stuff because medical devices are exempt from the limit.
That's another one where it feels worse to get caught. There's a certain point where the humiliation of being caught really
should play into
these. You
don't snore at all, do you? I don't know. I mean, this one also isn't that. This is another one that's not nearly as official as people think it is. Like, I have definitely brought an extra bag, told them it's a diabetes bag, and they're just like, all right, cool, whatever.
This is another request. Getting sex toys past airport security. Going on a trip soon from London Gatwick. Have a few sex toys that I would love to get through security. Hand luggage only. Advice? Toys are a glass wand, toy rabbit, and vibrating crescent-shaped prostate. But they said prostrate. Is that a new sex organ?
No, I think that's a Freudian slip, as they say.
Prostrate toy. Thanks. I know where you can put them. I know where you can put them to get a past security. I have a couple tips for this person.
Bring back the Hitachi wand.
Their pocket.
No, I think they make you empty those.
Oh.
Is that just a shame thing? You're allowed to bring that, aren't you?
Yeah. What is the issue here?
I think confidence is the answer there. Just look real confident.
Yeah, the top comment is it's not some kind of contraband. They won't take them away from you or anything. Just chill.
Oh, we got another pro tip from that lady from the advice column. If you bought a non-refundable airline ticket and can't travel, show up the airport for the flight wildly drunk. Is that true? Do they refund you? They'll deny you boarding and refund your ticket, typically. First comment says they won't refund your ticket. Yeah, first comment says no, they won't do that. They'll put you on a later flight.
Yeah, this seems stupid. First off, if they didn't refund it, what would you do? What if they let you on? Is an even crazier scenario.
And you're like, shit. And you wake up and you're in Singapore.
On your way to a place you don't need to be.
You're like Chandler Bing. You're on your way to, where does he try to get away from Fran Drescher? Uzbekistan?
Oh. Yeah, what happens in that episode?
He ends up buying the ticket.
Oh my God.
I need a fake ticket. And they're like, what do you mean? You want a ticket? And he's like, oh, like, what would you give a kid if they wanted, like, a ticket or something like that to play with?
What? And then they threaten him and they're like, sir, do I need to call security?
And he's like, no, I'll buy the ticket. Guess I'm going to Uzbekistan. I don't remember what
that is a good line. What would you give a kid if they wanted a ticket, sir?
Okay, I just passed your sex toys one. What's the next one? You want to do a few more?
I think we could end it soon. Do you want to end on a good one if we find one?
No, let's end on a bad one. Oh, this is doing the opposite advice. If you want to get something through airport security, make it seem like it's a dildo. That way the guy behind the monitor will have a chuckle and be good with it, whatever it is. So just mold your marijuana into the shape of a dildo to get it through. I like this one because it reminds me of the pro tip about when you go to the zoo, wear the same color as the zookeepers. That way the animals will be attracted to you. This one is wear high-vis clothing. Bright and orange, yellow stuff to make them think that you're
so the planes won't attack you.
Yeah. No, it's when you shop around, they'll think that you're an airport employee and they'll give you the discount if you wear high-vis clothing.
Yeah. Dress like a pilot. I wonder if that's illegal.
Is that illegal to impersonate a pilot?
I don't know. Feels like at an airport, it might be considered like a weird security thing for you to have the little airport or the little hat on and whatever.
I don't know. Like, what's illegal about that? You're allowed to do that.
To dress like a pilot in an airport? I don't know. It just feels wrong. It feels like they would yell at you.
I don't know. Ask for forgiveness, not for permission. All right. Do we have a way to wrap this up? Do we have a big facts, no cap on this?
Yeah. Big fact. When it comes to air travel, don't forget your AirPods. Those really are a necessity nowadays. Good noise cancellation.
You can charge your phone while you
listen to your music. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My no cap is if you do have a pretty long flight and you're worried about it, like me, go ahead and re-download one of those games you had during the pandemic where you just, like, make squares of circles or whatever of little colors in a game that keeps you distracted or whatever, like a Candy Crush.
What game
or, like,
is that? Oh.
It's similar to that in its, like, aesthetic and the way that it works. It's, like, an easy, dumb game. You can just turn your brain off.
You're saying become an iPad baby.
Basically, yeah, that's a good way to get through a flight if you need to. Re-download that game that you got during quarantine that just kind of kept you a little bit sane on some of those boring nights.
Bye.
Bye.